Our next producer comes via New York, where he produces a podcast called Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything, the tagline of which reads, personally connecting the dots, all of them. On his way to starting Theory of Everything, Benjamin appears to have already joined some dots, personally connecting every radio acronym within reach, it seems, working first at WZBC, then as a producer at WBUR, followed by senior cultural producer at WNYC, and then later doing TMI, too much information, on WFMU, and in amongst it all, somehow, also working for NPR, CBC, and the BBC. Theory of Everything, now part of the Radiotopia Network, has, as you might imagine, a very broad mandate. At this rate, Benjamin may very well personally connect and explain all aspects of the known universe. Right now, though, in the months leading up to this show, it's been a personal connection, very close to home, that he's been trying to make sense of. And with it, one word. This word has such a big job to do. It holds so much promise, and it begs the question, how much can one word bear? Thank you for defying the theory of practical travel distance and crossing hemispheres to be here tonight, Mr. Benjamin Walker.
That's the sound my father's pay-as-you-go cell phone makes when it's out of minutes and out of money. I don't know why I even bother emailing him to ask when he'll add more time so we can talk, because his answer is always the same. I will do it tomorrow. When I was a kid, I used to love hearing my father talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow was full of exciting people, amazing places, incredible opportunities. Tomorrow was where all of my father's dreams would become real. But there was a dark side to tomorrow. Tomorrow was when my father was going to ask his boss if he could have more time off to spend with his family. Tomorrow was when he was going to get back to his music. Tomorrow was when he was going to pay the bills. Tomorrow was when he was going to put oil in the car. Tomorrow was when he was going to go back to school. Tomorrow was when he was going to start looking for a new job. Tomorrow was when he was going to move. Tomorrow was when he was going to start drinking less. Tomorrow was when he was going to... My father's now 65 years old. He has no job, and he just got evicted. All of his things are in a storage locker, and he's now living in a homeless shelter. On the first of every month, the government puts some money on his pay-as-you-go phone. But if I don't call him before the 6th or the 7th, I have to put money on the phone myself. And when I do get him on the phone, it's always a bad connection. He's always walking or taking the bus somewhere. And if I press him about his situation, he gets angry. I'm not homeless, he says. I have a bed. I'm just taking a cheap vacation. Everything will be better tomorrow. I don't think my father realizes that he is now living in tomorrow. So I decide to visit him to find out what it's like there and if he wants me to help him leave. When I get in my rental car at the airport, I give him a call. And to my astonishment, his phone is once again out of time. So I actually have no idea as to where I can even find him. So, I go to my mom's place, where I'll be staying. I drop off my things, and I get on my laptop, and I put some money on his phone, so I can call him. My parents got divorced a long time ago, when I was in high school. Today, my mother's doing just fine. She's retired, she owns her own condo, she takes classes, she volunteers at her church, and on her refrigerator, there is a magnet that proclaims, "Every day is a gift." That's why they call it the present. I meet my father at the storage locker he shares with Ray, another homeless man. We're meeting here because I want to see my father's passport. He says he recently paid to have it renewed and that it's somewhere here in this locker. I want to believe him because if there is a passport, then perhaps he's also telling the truth about his plan to go to Israel in the fall. So I hold my breath as he flips through some of his boxes. But when he triumphantly pulls out a pair of pink running shoes, I lose my temper. I'm only here for a few days, Dad. There is just no more time to waste. Let's go get you signed up for senior housing. I'm not doing that, he says. I told you, I'm fine where I am. Ray throws his hands up in the air. I don't want to get involved in any of this father and son stuff, he mutters. He seems to know how this homeless thing works. His bag is stuffed with books and documents, and there are pens and envelopes tucked in all the side pockets. My father's bag is empty and shapeless. As Ray locks up, I accept that there is no passport and that I am going to have to find him another way out of here. Today is Father's Day, and we're at the library. This is where he says he spends all his time working on his projects. My father still has tons of projects. There's this play about experimental music, a multimedia installation about 1930s Paris, a photo essay about farm food. He uses the computers here at the library, he says, to do research and email his collaborators, directors, musicians, archivists, and art organizations. But he just used my laptop to check his email, and I took a peek at the send folder, and there's nothing, besides the emails to me, the ones where he promises to put some money on his phone. So he's lying about the projects, just like he was lying about the passport. So I'm going to have to try something else. I open up a web browser and pull up this TED Talk I want to show him.
What I'm here to talk with you about today is the link between the structure of the language you speak and how you find yourself with a propensity to save.
This economist believes that English speakers have a harder time dealing with tomorrow because of the way we use linguistics to construct the future.
Every time you discuss the future or any kind of a future event, grammatically you're forced to cleave that from the present and treat it as if it's something viscerally different. That's going to make it harder to save. If, on the other hand, you speak a futureless language, the present and the future, you speak about them identically. If that subtly nudges you to feel about them identically, that's going to make it easier to save.
I ask my father what he thinks about this idea. Might his obsession with tomorrow be keeping him from focusing on the present? But my plan to engage him in an intellectual conversation fails. He grabs the laptop from me and starts searching for some other TED Talk he read about by some 14-year-old kid. He doesn't even know the kid's name or what the topic was about, but he's certain that it's way more important than what I'm trying to make him see right now.
Hey, are we still on for tomorrow?
And his mad clicking launches a pop-up video that takes over the whole screen. It's incredible. It's an ad about tomorrow. This sends me over the edge, and I start shouting, "When are you going to do these things you say you want to do?" And he shouts right back at me.
I'm doing it now, okay?
Well, what is your definition of now?
Tomorrow.
The problem is that I just see way too much of myself in my father. I mean, tomorrow. That is when I'm going to deal with all of my problems. And that is when all of my dreams are going to become real. So where do I get off stomping on his tomorrow bubble? And why can't I just tell him that I love him?
You ruined my Father's Day. Just don't ask me more questions, okay? It ruins it.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi, babe. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Today is the last day of my trip. I finally get to meet Sonia. Sonia's about 30 years old. She has a son who was taken away by the state. My father says Sonia is his best friend, but I have no idea what that means. We pick her up at the shady motel that she lives at with her boyfriend. And when she gets in the car, I notice that she's wearing the pink running shoes. We drive to a Thai restaurant, and we sit down outside. Sonia takes her shoes off and orders a Long Island iced tea and puts some music on her cell phone. She moves and talks like a junkie. My father orders 2 plates of noodles. He's starving. Before the eviction, they lived together for about a year. She moved into his bedroom and my father slept on the living room floor. And even though he's now living in a homeless shelter, she tells me that my father is paying her half of the motel rent. Sonia also tells me that my father spends most of his days hanging out with her at the motel while her boyfriend's at work. This guy, she says, once threw my father down the stairs. The police used to come to their old place all the time. Sometimes, Sonia says, my father would call the cops on her boyfriends, and sometimes, like when he threw a bottle at her friend's car, she would call the cops on him, and one night they both got hauled away to the drunk tank. So, I finally have all the answers to my questions about what my father is doing with his money and his time. But these answers provide no solace, no enlightenment, and no resolution. We go back to the car, and as we drive away, Sonia topples over in the back seat, music still blaring out of her cell phone. She is a junkie.
Sonia? Oh, shit, is she gonna, Dad, is she like, okay?
Yes.
Look, Dad.
She's just tired.
She's on.
She may have some
totally
drink.
Totally high, Dad.
No, she.
Dad, she is on drugs.
Don't be so judgmental.
I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying that your friend is. Is she like breathing?
Yes, man. She's.
Because look.
Man, she's asleep.
Dad, just look what's going on here.
Okay, it's enough.
What's enough?
I mean,
what, that your friend is passed out in the back seat?
So she's passed out.
Oh, it's just a shame.
Perhaps my father likes feeling like a caretaker. Or perhaps he likes that Sonia doesn't mind when he confuses the present and the future. Perhaps this is what love is in the land of tomorrow. Total denial. But at this moment, I just can't do it.
Sonia, we're home.
Okay, I'm fine.
We have to get out of the car. Man has to go.
Sonia, I have to go.
Come on, Sonia, come on. Hold on to me, okay?
No, I'm not doing
it. Sorry, man.
I watch him walk away with Sonia in his arms. And as much as I want to blame her, she is not the reason my father is stuck here. I panic. What if this is the last time I ever see him? So I take out my cell phone and I snap a picture, because I don't know how else to deal with that thought. So I spend a lot of time now contemplating this photo that I took. It looks like he's heading for the seedy, crumbling motel in front of him, but I know that his true destination lies beyond the motel, beyond the squalor, beyond the horizon. And I hope that one day I get to visit him there.